Go woke, go broke. That hashtag was trending online as Bud Light drinkers turned against the brand after a product placement deal with TikTok star Dylan Mulvaney went viral and connected her transgender status to what historically has been a male-dominated brand.
This month, I celebrated my day 365 of womanhood, and Bud Light sent me possibly the best gift ever, a can with my face on it.
Bud Light, Anheuser-Busch. Have a terrific day.
That's Kid Rock. He led the boycott rallying cry with conservative Twitter pouring out their beer and using Bud Light cans for target practice. As investors, we're more interested in what the backlash is going to do for sales and ultimately the Anheuser-Busch stock price and if it might potentially help their competitors. So today on Dumb Money, the Bud Light boycott and the stock trade that nobody's talking about.
You're listening to the Dumb Money Live podcast.
Chris Jordan, it is a hot topic today. There's potentially a huge stock trade brewing. The Bud Light boycott extending beyond just that brand, affecting the entire Anheuser-Busch InBev conglomerate. There were rumors that the Bud Light marketing team was fired over this. The company released a statement clarifying that that is not true. They said that from time to time, they produce unique commemorative cans for fans and brand influencers like Dylan Mulvaney. This commemorative can was a gift to celebrate a personal milestone and not for sale to the general public. But other than that, the brand has been quiet. The Bud Light Twitter account has not tweeted anything since April 1st, neither has the Budweiser account. What do you think is going on at Bud headquarters, and what do you think this means for the stock? And potentially, I see, Chris, you're wearing that Coors t-shirt today. What is this doing for their competitors?
Well, take a guess what trade I made yesterday. Here's the thing. I received a text from a buddy of mine this week, and here's what it says. My friend's sister's boyfriend sells for Coors and Miller Lite and said, My friend's sister's boyfriend sells for Coors and Miller Lite and said him and his team have seen a massive influx of buy orders, and they've already hit, get ready for this, 80% of their annual sales quotas for the entire year, and it's only been 1 week since the transgender Bud Light news. OMG, if that is even remotely representative of what is happening right now in the world of beer distribution, there is a monster opportunity for investors to trade on this news.
It's that kind of arbitrage that we're always looking for. We're looking for something that might be good for a company or something that might be bad for a company. Or in this case, it's not great for one and could be big news for the other.
Here's what I think people don't understand, because a lot of people are shorting Budweiser on this news event. The problem is that Bud Light sales represent approximately 10% of Anheuser-Busch sales as an entity. I think they generate roughly $500 million in global sales of Bud Light. $5 billion. I think they generate roughly $5 billion of sales of Bud Light globally. So let's assume that Bud Light sales drop by approximately 10%. Over the next few quarters. Okay, let's just make that assumption. That would only be roughly a 1% drop in sales for the parent company. That's not enough to get me excited about shorting Budweiser. However, where are those $500 million of sales going to? They're going to Miller Lite and Coors Light, the two biggest competitors of Bud Light. And that company, Molson Coors, generates about $9.7 billion of sales a year. And guess what, guys? Miller Lite and Coors Lite sales are roughly $5 billion of that. So almost 50% of the revenue for Molson Coors is generated from Miller Lite and Coors Lite. So if we see, let's just assume that $500 million that Bud Light is losing over the next couple quarters or next year moves to Miller Lite and Coors Light, that would be a monumental increase in revenue for Molson Coors. that would essentially be a 5% increase in revenue for the company. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but we're seeing early signs that there is a massive shift in certain markets, at least, from Bud Light to both Miller Lite and Coors Light. And this morning, I went out to multiple grocery stores, and I happened to find beer distributors on the street. And I talked to two beer distributors, okay, that I found, one in the parking lot of the grocery store and one in the middle of the street. I pulled them over and I said, hey, tell me what's happening. And they both distributed for Molson Coors, and one also distributed for Bud Light. What they told me was that they saw one saw a massive downtick in the last week of orders for select grocery store of Bud Light. The other told me that they saw basically no change. So what that tells me is that there's something here. It's probably regional. It's probably market by market. Maybe not a big enough deal to short Budweiser, but for me, I'm going long tap, right? I'm going long Molson Coors on this news. Like, it just, first of all, I also found out, remember our big trade of last year was tap Molson Coors based on the launch of Topo Chico's alcohol line. That's doing really well. They're getting better shelf space than ever. And I spoke to the distributor about that, and he said, man, they are really crushing it with their Topo Chico sales this year. He goes, they're peaking right now. We expect them to have a really big summer. So this summer, I feel really good about being in tap, at least for the next couple months going into the summertime, with all of the momentum, the additional tailwind of orders they're going to get from this whole Bud Light catastrophe. What do you guys think?
And we've seen the Molson Coors stock chart. You know, it's kind of been flat. This is a 1-year chart that we're looking at, and not all that exciting, if I can get rid of the ads here. But if you look at what's happened over the last 5 days, it's up 7% just today. I got in late on this. I'm kicking myself for not, you know, I was thinking about this. I saw this trade. I saw this controversy. I wanted to get in, and I just dragged my feet and didn't do it until this morning. I bought some options, but I feel like Coors has already made their move.
Oh, by the way, full disclosure, I do own call options on Molson Coors. Also, I could care less about the politics of this. I'm not on either side. And the way I see it is, we're observational traders. Make your money off the trade. We're not financial advisors. So do your own homework and make your own decision. But yeah, make your money off the trade and then put the money to support your activism on either side, right or left. I could really care less. For me, I just see this as an opportunity. Listen, who drinks Bud Light, guys? Let me ask you a question. Have you seen the video of the Budweiser head of marketing that caused this whole issue? She was trying to save a dying brand. Yes. But do you know that millennials, especially Gen Z does not really consume beer the same way that boomers do. I don't think there's anything that they could have done at Bud Light to revive the Bud Light brand for younger people, which is what they were trying for.
Yeah, it is a dying brand. It's been a dying brand for a while, and it's just, yeah, it's the sign of the times, and they were trying to find a new audience.
You can make an argument against Miller Lite, Coors Light, that they're dying brands. And by the way, you have seen Coors Light cans with the rainbow flag. You have seen Miller Lite try to go out and do activism in LGBTQ+ bars. And so I think people are just...
It's not the headlines, no, Jordan.
Bud Light, not the headlines. When all these brands have been doing the exact same thing, and to hold one to account versus the other, you know, I just don't really see that any of this really makes sense. And so what you've got to figure out is this going to spark a long-term trend? Because if it doesn't, then the move's already been made. But if it does, and all of a sudden, you know, venues start only selling Miller Lite instead of Bud Light because of this, then maybe there's still some more moves to be made.
So Jordan, I agree with you that actually Coors has a longer history of supporting the LGBTQ community.
Yeah.
But it's not the headline right now, right? And so it's not what people are focused on. And I don't really see this as a long-term trade for me. This is a multi-week to multi-month trade max for me. I see it as a short-term tailwind going into the big season, right? For drink, like for the big drinking season going into the summer. So like for me, if you look at Bud Light drinkers, Jordan, right? They're not super sophisticated boomers, right? Boomers tend to be kind of like more kind of focused on, I think the people that are boycotting this are not necessarily doing deep research, right? To see who.
I don't think individuals.
Jordan, your mic is, you need to jiggle the wire on your mic. It's gone out.
Oh, my.
Weird noise.
Health.
There you go.
My back.
You're back.
So yeah, look, I don't think that individuals boycotting Bud Light and switching to Miller Lite is going to make a huge dent in either company's, you know, bottom lines. I think the only thing that could really make an impact is, you know, all of a sudden, you know, major restaurants start making a change, or, you know, concert venues, or, you know, tour promotion, they start making changes. I mean, that's the only way that you're really going to see a big impact in any of this.
But is it fair to say that we don't need to see a big impact? You see some impact at grocery. You see some impact at restaurants. You see maybe some impact at arenas. And collectively, maybe you see a temporary 10% dip for a couple quarters in Bud Light sales. Probably doesn't do all that much for Budweiser, but that could be a huge win for Molson Coors. As you know, a 10% drop, that's $500 million annually. If even a good percentage of that moves to Coors Light and Miller Lite, that is a game changer for that company. An absolute game changer.
I don't think that's $500 million. I thought Anheuser-Busch in totality, I thought their North America revenue was something like 20 or 30 billion. And so you're talking maybe like a couple billion tops, but that's
Jordan,
Anheuser-Busch in North America.
Jordan, no. I'm looking at globally, and I could be wrong, but I'm...
Oh, no, you can't look at global sales, dude, because Bud Light, I mean, Bud Light is not going to be a huge brand. I think this is a uniquely American issue.
Well, Jordan, I'm looking at global sales for Bud Light. Sales, it could be wrong. $5 billion is the number that I'm seeing. So what I'm thinking is...
Yeah, I could see $5 billion global for Bud Light, but compared to what, like I said, I think Anheuser-Busch's North America revenue is like $20 or $30 billion.
We lost you, dude. We lost you, Jordan.
What is the deal with mine? My computer is playing tricks on me.
You have a loose connection.
No, it's not. It's something else.
So you're saying probably not a big deal for Budweiser, but Jordan, if you get a 10% drop. That's a big deal for Molson Coors. Even if they pick up $100 million, if they pick up $150 million, $200 million over the course of the year, that is a big deal for Molson Coors, right? I do agree that the beer category generally is in trouble long term, and I think Molson Coors is going to have long term issues there with Coors Light and Miller Lite. But again, for me, this is just it's a short-term, multi-week, multi-month tailwind. I like it a lot. Don't you also think, Jordan, that in the current economic environment, because I know you're a macro guy, that there could be shifts to some of this cheaper beer, like would have been Bud Light if not for this, but Coors Light, Miller Light. I think they're kind of probably decently positioned for this kind of economic backdrop that we're in when it comes to drinking, and people may be drinking less at fancier places and going for just the cases of cheap beer.
Yeah, I think beer generally does well in recession. And then also it's a reopening play too. So if you look at the China reopening, you know, that's going to be a big headwind or a big tailwind for Bud, who has a big, you know, Asia presence. But yeah, I think TAP is fine. I'm not rushing out to buy TAP on this news though. Oh man, it's already moved 4.5% today.
And maybe some of that's because of me, but I don't make a lot of it. Maybe some of it's me.
You're listening to the Dumb Money Live podcast.
How many options did you buy? I bought
not
50.
Many. I was buying yesterday, and I bought some more today. I have more than you, Dave, but I don't have like that much more. And like I said, I think this is just an interesting tailwind for the company. I didn't even check to see when they have earnings. Do you guys know when TAP has earnings next?
Yes, I think it's May 2nd.
May 1st or 2nd, yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. They might actually mention on that earnings call, you know, how they've been impacted by all this. Again, so I'm going to go back to the text, right? Because that text is actually really powerful. And I don't know that it's representative. But again, this kid works for Molson Coors works for Molson Coors and is saying that he has hit 80% of the annual sales quota. Like, that's wild.
In mid-April? Yeah, that's amazing.
So something's happening, and something's happening there, right? And I did. So one of the beer guys I spoke to today told me that we probably won't see the impact for a few weeks of what's happening with Bud Light, but he said that in some of the stores that he reps, some of the big grocery stores, he said that he has seen a sharp drop. Already in Bud Light. So I think that, and again, the other person I spoke to transparently told me he saw no change, absolutely no change at all. So I don't think this is a systemic issue that's going to exist in every single city. In fact, I did see some reports that Bud Light sales in Manhattan have not changed at all. Kind of makes sense, right? It's Manhattan. It's less sensitive to this type of an issue, but I do think there are a lot of places where Bud Light is consumed in pretty big volumes, guys. Okay, you know what I'm talking about, like the South, the Midwest, deep suburbia, rural areas, primarily male. There are a hell of a lot of male drinkers that are boomers that are sensitive to this topic and probably will overreact, or maybe some people are angry and just they're looking for some way to vent. I do think this is real. I do think part of this is real.
I think it's real. I don't think it's going to have a huge impact on Budweiser at all. But I do agree with your thesis that this is potentially really big for Molson Coors.
I think a marginal dollar could hit Molson Coors, even though I think it's ridiculous that this story blew up, but then, you know, anything that Molson Coors has done has not.
But that's, you know what I mean? So it's like,
this is reality, right? We are observers of the world. That's all we're doing. We're just observing what's happening. We're not saying it's right or wrong. Listen, I watched 100 TikToks on this, and I agree. I did see a bunch that were like, guys, I mean, it's, a lot of reaction videos are like, Coors has been doing this since the 70s.
Yeah.
They've been supporting that community since the 70s. Right. But you know who's not seeing a lot of those videos, Jordan? People that have the algorithm driven to a certain type of content won't see those reaction videos. They're only seeing the angry videos of throwing out Bud Light and let's screw this company and all that stuff. So it's just how the algorithm works. So I don't know.
Yeah. And long term, I think that Budweiser being inclusive is probably a great thing long term for their brands, because they are running out of people who are drinking their product. And if you think about other companies that have been canceled numerous times, has Disney really been hurt by the many, many times they get canceled by the same group that's boycotting Bud?
Okay, but Dave, this is where I disagree, because they're trying to be inclusive to revive sales of a brand of product that is not generally consumed in high quantities from the younger demographic that they're trying to reach, no matter what the marketing is.
But it could. And the reality is the younger market that doesn't have as much money isn't drinking premium IPAs. They're drinking lower cost things like Bud Light.
No, they're drinking Borgs, Dave. You know that's what we did in last week's episode. I'm telling you, as a restaurant owner, guys, I am seeing things that are blowing my mind. Our beer sales over the past 24 months have dropped through the floor. Our alcohol sales have gone through the roof. Like, I cannot even believe this transition that's happening, especially with the younger demographic. Because let me tell you, a lot of our alcohol sales are late night, Friday and Saturday night, age 21 to 26. And that demographic is coming in and they are not drinking beer anymore. They are drinking liquor. They're drinking mixed drinks. They're drinking alcohol. They're drinking, like, we have all these kind of pre-made kind of alcoholic drinks, you know, they're like, but none of it's beer. It's wild.
I think that that's probably
It's not Miller Lite. It's not Coors Light.
It's indicative of your demographic at your restaurant. You're a higher end place and you have a very nice, fancy cocktail menu. I choose not to drink beer when I'm there because your cocktails are so good.
No, but that's not what the kids are drinking at 1 a.m. These kids, these SMU kids, are just literally drinking like tequila. Like they're just doing shots. Like all I'm saying is liquor is hot, hot, hot right now with the young generation. They love liquor. They love like just regular alcohol, not beer. And Jordan, the IPA movement is like dead. That IPA movement that is like so falling apart at it seems. I think everybody's coming to the realization that most people just don't like the taste of IPA and we're done with it. You do. Well, you are a guy that rides his bicycle like 100 miles a week and drinks IPAs. You should be living in Denver, like living that lifestyle. Like, but you are an anomaly. And you're also, well, you're not a boomer, but you kind of are. Age-wise, you're not a boomer.
What are you talking about?
A boomer sometimes with your IPA.
He acts like a boomer.
Dude, I don't like long term. I think beer is dead long term, but short term, amongst those who are drinking beer, I think we have one hell of a tailwind for Molson Coors, and a tiny bit of a headwind for Budweiser. I'm not shorting Bud on this, but I am long Molson Coors.
Yeah, I would, if I were to do anything, it would be that I would not short Budweiser because of this. Mm-hmm.
No. I did short Budweiser literally like the day after this happened, and I just waited for it to drop, and it didn't drop, and then like I exited my options, and then right after I exited my options, it dropped like 4 or 5 days in a row. That's the timing was way off.
Yeah.
But that was the react. I was looking for the reactionary drop. That would not be based on reality, just based on, oh my gosh, the retail investors, people just like other people thinking other people are going to sell it.
When it hit the news cycle, that's when I was like, how did I miss this? Because I saw it online. I saw it on Twitter literally I just saw it on Twitter. I don't think I even saw it on TikTok, but I saw it on Twitter before it hit the news, and I was thinking, I just missed it. I hate myself for missing it.
Dude.
The only thing that missed it for me was that I was contemplating buying Bud because of the China reopening play, but
yeah.
I didn't because of the controversy. So I don't know. I might still buy Bud. I don't know.
But by the way, Jordan, Lee Autry says you have a boomer soul, and I could not agree more. Lisa Autry.
Oh my gosh.
I agree, guys. Tequila, just, you know, side note, tequila is hotter than it's ever been. It's like, it's crazy how much tequila we sell at my restaurant. Dave, your bar, I would assume, is similar. But you have a weird crowd at your bar, but you're probably selling crazy amounts of tequila, right?
I think our daytime crowd is just drinking beer all day long, and then our nighttime crowd is switching over to alcohol, and I think Tito soda is and probably will forever be the number one drink. But yeah, tequila shots are always big.
Yeah. By the way, Jordan, I think Abrion 88 makes a good point, because he says you guys are missing the point. The right doesn't. I think when he speaks, says you guys, I think he's talking to Jordan. But he says the right doesn't care that much about companies supporting LGBTQ. But the issue is about Dylan Mulvaney, who the right says, right or wrong, who the right says caters to is grooming kids. So that's a perception, right? Like that's a perception that people have, right or wrong. So they feel that this particular individual is the extreme version of the thing that they're against, and that's what's probably driving all the passion.
Yeah, the groomer farce. Yeah,
like I said, it's not about whether it's real or not, Jordan. And that's where we have to, you know, make a distinction.
Right.
And you know how things get when they go viral, dude. It just, you end up getting the headline story, right? And we also know this. People enjoy being angry. People want to be angry at something. Like, I don't know what it is. Post-pandemic, there's a lot of angry people looking for something to be angry about. Has boycott culture, guys, gotten to the point where if we've gone too long without a boycott, we're looking for a boycott? Like, does that not feel it?
I always feel like the boycott culture has gotten to the point where when something gets boycotted, you just kind of ignore it because everything's being boycotted.
Well, the problem is that everybody disagrees on everything. And so if one group boycotts, it just encourages another group to go and buy. And so there's no unity.
So, Jordan, I totally agree with you, except when the thing being boycotted is only mostly being consumed by a single demographic, then that demographic in this case has a lot of leverage over that thing.
Like some people are just like, thinking like, oh yeah, I don't really care, but I'm not going to buy Bud Light because it sucks. Right. And it's not, has nothing to do if I agree or disagree with the politics. I'm just not going to buy that. I'm just not going to buy that product because I don't consume that product.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Cause like, I don't think the opposite side of this boycott, the average 20-something-year-old who's like, hey, I that doesn't bother me. In fact, I want to support that. They're not going to start drinking Bud Light. They're just not going to do it, right? Like, yeah. The type of drinks that they drink, they're not drinking, like, American beer, and they're not going to start drinking American beer no matter what the brand is. So it could. That's why I think this boycott is kind of interesting, because it's such, like, a unique demographic that consumes this old-school product of American beer.
Okay, can I get your opinion on an offshoot of this? Because the next move by Dylan Mulvaney, and I haven't seen this in the news, but I've seen it in an article, after tarnishing Bud Light, Dylan Mulvaney is now promoting Nike sports bras and leggings on Instagram. There was a tweet from @EndWokeness that said Dylan Mulvaney is the new face of Nike women's sports bras and leggings with a photo. If the haters want to take down Nike for seeking the endorsement of a trans woman, they'll have to try harder. But it's this article saying that Nike's sales are up, even though they were canceled by the End Wokeness crowd over the kneeling situation. What was that?
So Dave, that kind of gets back to exactly what I was saying. The Nike demographic is very different, right, from the American beer demographic, and that Nike actually made a decision a couple of years ago to go all in on the top 7 markets. They're like, we want to focus on the top 7 big urban markets, right, and not emphasize everything between the cities. So like Nike, it actually kind of works in their favor in a way when they make those moves, because for every person they lose, they might theoretically pick up 1.2 people, right?
Right. Wasn't there already a backlash on Nike where people were like burning their Nikes and they, you know, was it over Kaepernick? What was it, Dave? Do you remember what the outrage was for?
I think it was the Kaepernick protest. They protested racial injustice by kneeling at the national anthem in football games, but but then it came back that it became a big hit campaign. The Kaepernick collaboration had them burning shoes and ruining socks by cutting the swoosh logo off of them. The campaign was a smash hit, delivering a spike in sales, and Nike continued to top expectations for revenue growth, with 2022 fourth quarter net income reaching $1.44 billion.
Yeah, no, obviously this is a totally different, you know, issue or set of politics than bringing Dylan in for campaign.
But that's what we just have to keep an eye on what's going on, yeah, so that we can try to make the right moves in our stock portfolios.
Right.
You're listening to the Dumb Money Live podcast.
Guys, speaking of Nike, I cannot even believe I've made I made $20,000 on that Nike trade on the Air premiere this last weekend, which was last week's Dumb Money episode. Yeah. If you guys haven't seen it, you have to check out our episode last week. We talked about how we thought Nike was going to massively benefit, at least as a, from a perception standpoint, from the quality and the representation they had in the Air movie that came out this last weekend, which, by the way, I saw it with the family. It was freaking incredible. Like, oh my gosh, it was such an awesome movie. And I was so glad as I was watching the movie, all I was thinking was Nike's going to open up big next week. They're going to open up and they're going to stay up for a few days. And that's exactly what's happened. So that's been a big trade. I actually exited a piece of the trade. I still have a little bit more to exit. I'm almost out of the trade, but it's been a fun one. And it just goes to show observational investing, social arb investing is back. We're back, guys. Like,
yeah, I mean, if you want to hang on to this trend a little bit, so I'm not saying you, if IFI, if any of us would have just like glommed on to, you know, the ticker symbol TAP the second that we heard about this, we could have made a little few more dollars, you know. I mean, if you agree, disagree, whatever. I mean, the stock has reacted. So,
I would encourage everyone, and I'm going to make a commitment to all of our community that I'm going to re-engage with our Discord. I promise to get in Discord at minimum once or twice a week, kind of read, you know, the observations that the community has in hopes that we can get to these things a little bit quicker. It's dumbmoney.tv/Discord, right, Dave?
That's free to join.
It's just a place for us to share knowledge and information and help each other surface these kind of cultural shifts and consumer behavior shifts a little bit quicker. And it allows us to dissect other people's ideas and to poke holes in, you know, the thesis that we're talking about on the show today or that anyone else in the community has. It's how we get smarter. It's how we invest better. And I know we've dropped the ball and haven't been very active in Discord, but I actually had a meeting with our mods this week. And I really want to try to get back in that world, because not that the market is stabilizing, because it's still pretty volatile, but I do see the light at the end of the tunnel now. I'm kind of feeling that our social arb methodology is going to have a big year. Nearly every big trade we've made the past 5-6 months has worked out, and I kind of regret not going in heavier on all these trades. Have you guys seen Novo, what's going on? It's at $166 bucks a share. My God. Eli Lilly. Look at Eli Lilly. Like, these things are, all of our stuff is moving. Like, it's absolutely incredible. Guys, people were making fun of us for talking about this semaglutide trend every freaking day. And I was tweeting about it. And people were like, what are you doing? And like, this is why. Right? Like, It finally came together. So, and by the way, we're still getting insights. As far as I can see, demand is still far exceeding supply, both in terms of Novo and Eli Lilly. We have some community members that are helping us with research. You know who you are. Thank you. It's still outstripping supply. My analysis is that Novo is likely able to monetize the current demand a lot better than Eli Lilly is, just because they've been able to ramp up their manufacturing of, the few drugs that they have on the market. I'm sure Eli Lilly will catch up, and Eli Lilly has, their version of the semaglutide drug is going to likely be approved for mass consumption for obesity, not just for diabetes, later this year. And that's why people are starting to get excited about Eli Lilly. But honestly, both these companies, I believe, have a bright next 12 to 24 months ahead of them. And I'm really glad I'm heavy weighted in both.
Yeah, I'm only in Novo, but good move on that Eli Lilly as well.
Well, Eli Lilly, Dave, is like everything's kind of in front of them still. Now, it's not as much of a pure play on the semaglutide trend, but like when everything's in front of them, like their drug will be, it's Mounjaro will be superior to the Novo drugs, and it already is, but once it starts getting prescribed more broadly due to the new obesity designation that's likely to get approved later this year, the weight loss is better. That said, Novo has drugs in the pipe that are even better than that, that are likely to get approved next year. So it's going to be like both of them stair-stepping over the next 18 to 24 months. I honestly think both of them are going to be falling short of demand for at least the next 12 to 18 months. So it really doesn't matter. They're both, as much as they can make, is going to get consumed on a global level.
Yeah. Here's my little cheat sheet on which is which. As far as diabetes versus weight loss, Eli Lilly versus Novo Nordisk. And if you want your own copy of this, just go over on Twitter. I'm at Dave Hansen. This is something I tweeted a while back when we were talking about these drugs.
Okay, so Dave, I'm going to tease our, what I think might be the next episode if the research all works out and you guys agree. I'm working on a holiday, 2023 holiday trend right now.
Which holiday? It's April. Are you planning for the 4th of July or something?
The gift buying holiday, Christmas. I'm looking at a holiday gift buying trend that I think could be big, that I think I've identified a company that will benefit. I have more research to do. I will discuss it first in the Dumb Money Discord. I'll put that in there in the next few days and kind of get everyone's reaction. People might already be talking about it there. I don't even know. And maybe we'll talk about that on next week's Dumb Money. So please follow. Please like this episode. Give us a thumbs up, guys. And then next week could be a really good one, guys.
Yes. And before you go, you do need to give us a thumbs up because only like a third of the current viewers have logged in with their thumb.
Agree. Thumbs up be appreciated. So, everyone's asking about Crocs. Remember the show where like I exited almost all my Crocs and then did you talk me into getting back in some? So I'm back in Crocs, but I'm just not in as heavily as I have been historically. So, you know, I'm in, but not that much.
Yeah. And Crocs is, what's it been fun? It's kind of going sideways over the last 3 months. Basically up and down within the range up 2% for the last 6 months or 3 months.
Yep.
But 6 months, look at that. 70% gain. When did I tell you to get back into that?
I
right before earnings.
It was probably somewhere, yeah, I think it was right before earnings, and they had a great earnings. So
because I think this green line is when I got back in.
Are you guys still in On Running?
Nope.
You out?
I'm out.
Yeah. Look at that. What a beautiful last few weeks in On Running. Love it. Love it so much. Whew. Someone says, what about WBD with the Harry Potter game? Haven't looked up that.
Is that Warner?
Right. What?
Is that Warner?
I don't know. WBD. If it is Warner, I don't think it's going to move the needle for them, any Harry Potter game, but it's a $34 billion company, Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to move the needle, guys, for a $34 billion market cap company. It's possible, but you really need something to be meaningful for that to happen. All right. Until next week.
All right. That's it. We're Dumb Money. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.